The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to kuci.org. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 in Irvine. Good day. This is Katrina Kirkaby, and I'm here with Tina Spindler, and we are UCCE Master Gardeners, and we're here with In the Garden with Master Gardeners. And today we're going to be talking about what's going on in our garden in May. How exciting!
May, spring is here. Actually, it's been here for a month already, plus. And my garden's looking awesome right now until the heat comes.
Your garden is looking so awesome right now. I can't believe it. It is so beautiful.
Thanks, Katrina. Now, how's your garden doing? You got all your plants in for spring and ready for summer to come?
I got a lot of plants in, ready for summer to come. I haven't been quite doing as many of my annuals, trying to conserve a little bit of water, but it's looking nice out there right now.
Good. Yeah, we'll talk about that, I think, a little bit, because this is May. This is when the heat is really going to start coming, although maybe we'll get some May gray and June gloom, but we know the heat's right around the corner, and with this, you know, terrible, terrible drought we're having, we'll talk about what we need to do in our gardens today, but we'll also talk about it with a mind towards being wise with our water and giving folks some hints on how they can do that and yet still enjoy their garden and maybe grow some good food.
I think that's a really important topic. You know, being mindful of our water or lack thereof and still being able to have a beautiful garden and how we could try to manage it a little bit better and still have the results.
Absolutely. And you know me, I'm a flower-aholic. And so even with this drought, I am going to be trying to do things that allow me to continue to have the joy that my flowers, you know, bring me, but in a way that is not going to use resources unwisely. So should we get started?
Let's get started. Where do you want to start today? There's so much to talk about.
Let's just talk about May in general for just a second. So May is, sometimes we can have some hot days, but it's kind of our, you know, last month, along with part of June, where we really don't have that super hot weather that we know we're going to have in July, August, and September. So May is when we can finish doing our planting and still give our little plants a chance to get settled in before they're bombarded with the really hot days of summer. So if you haven't finished planting your summer or warm season crops, then May is your chance to finish that up. So I know you and I have been planting in April. We started in March, and we've continued through April. And what did you plant? And let's start with your veggie garden. What did you plant in your veggie garden?
Oh, let's see. I planted tomatoes, of course.
Uh-huh.
I planted long beans. I planted bush beans. I have butternut squash going and spaghetti squash and something called longum naples. And I planted lots of kale. And, oh my goodness.
Did you do any
lots
peppers yet?
Lots and lots of peppers.
Lots of peppers, yeah.
Hot peppers and sweet peppers and lots of peppers.
Do you do eggplant?
Do you? Yes,
yeah,
eggplant.
I don't do eggplant, but I thought you did, yeah.
I especially love the Japanese eggplant varieties and some of the big global eggplants for making Parmesan or whatever when you're cooking with that. But really, I like the Japanese, so we're doing a lot of that.
How about squashes? Did you do any squashes?
Lots of squashes.
And well, you said butternut, right? Did you do any of the zucchinis or pans or any of those?
Did zucchinis, did one called, I can't even think of the name of it. It's one of my favorite ones. Next show, I'll tell you what it is because I absolutely love it. So, yes, we have that going. And then we're also doing a little bit of rotation. So we planted the majority of our plants.
Uh-huh.
And depending on what it is, every 2 weeks or a month later, I'm going to plant something else so it keeps going a little later into the season.
Got it. So that's a good idea to mention. Even if you did plant some of these plants in March or April, if you do still have room in your garden, successive planting is a great thing to do because then you don't have all of your harvest all at once and then run out of things. So I know I love to do that, especially in the summertime with the green beans, so that I have a steady supply of green beans, you know, all summer long. So that's a great idea. But if you didn't get your warm season stuff in at all, you still can do that and not think that you're too late. And in fact, it's actually kind of a bit better time to plant the things that really like heat, which would be your melons, which are part of the squash family, as you know, and also your peppers. So melons and peppers, you can plant them the end of March and throughout April, and I did in the latter half of April plant my peppers, but they kind of really want that really hot weather before they start really pushing out a lot of growth. So don't feel bad if you didn't plant them at all yet. They really, really kind of like that hot weather. And of course, tomatoes are perfectly happy to still be going in May.
You know, the only thing is maybe not planting by seed anymore.
Absolutely. What you can do is you can plant those vining plants by seed. So the squashes, the melons, the green beans, those things you can still plant from seed directly in the ground. But Katrina, you're right. The seeds for peppers and tomatoes, those will just take too long to get to the right size to put in the garden. And you probably wouldn't be getting them in the garden until, you know, 6 weeks from now, which would be, you know, towards the end of June into July. And then you don't have as long of a season to get those produce, you know, out of the garden and into your tummy. So I agree with you. I would do transplants of those guys at this point. So
what are you planning right now?
Well, I pretty much have just finished probably the last week of April, you know, all of the plants, the warm season plants that I planted, and pretty much the same thing as you, but I don't do eggplant because my family doesn't really eat eggplant. And I did plant a bunch of new herbs this year. I kind of had, you know how your herb bed just gets kind of tired and needs to just be redone a bit. So
yeah.
I did dug up my herb bed for me. Yay. And so I just put kind of everything fresh in there. Of course, basil, because absolutely this is the season for basil. It just goes like gangbusters when the weather's warm like this.
What type of basil do you like?
You know, I just use the sweet Italian basil because I like that the best in pesto. And I've tried some other kinds, but it's just a personal choice. You know, I just like that sweet Italian basil. But I know there's lots of fun ones out there. Do you plant some other ones?
No, that's my favorite too.
Yeah. For cooking, and I do cook a lot with basil, so I stick with that. But I do have a perennial African blue basil plant in my garden, which I love as a landscape plant. I don't know if you have one of those, but
no.
It has that wonderful basil-y smell.
My husband wanted to plant one. I'm like, what do we do with it?
Yeah, I don't use it in cooking. It's more bitter than the Italian basil, but man, it's a great garden plant and it attracts bees like nobody's business.
Really? And it's an annual.
No, this is a perennial.
It's a perennial.
Yeah, the normal one that we plant, the Italian sweet basil, is an annual. And so, you know, that one poops out when the weather turns cool. But this one's a perennial, and I've probably had mine for 5 years, and it gets a little woody, but I just, you know, cut it back and generate some new growth. And I love it because it's a real bee attractor, and so I have it in between my vegetable garden and my fruit trees because I feel that that's giving the bees a home and making them come to the garden, and then they'll go pollinate my fruit trees and my tomatoes and beans and such. So I use it kind of as a pollinator plant, and also because I think it's pretty in the garden.
I know what I'm planting this week.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
Can find it. African blue basil. I've really enjoyed having it. It was actually a start that another master gardener gave me. He started it from cuttings and shared it with some of us, and it's been in my garden ever since, which I love. I love, you know, shared plants. Katrina brought me a new kale today. What's the name of it again?
Cosmic kale.
Cosmic kale.
I love it. Cosmic kale. It's one of my new favorites.
Wow.
If I could talk about it for a second.
Yes, please do.
It's beautiful. It's variegated. It's green. It's got some white on it. It's an attractive plant. And it's not as, some people think kale's kind of bitter.
Uh-huh.
It's not as bitter as some of the kales. And it's wonderful in salads. I've incorporated into, I mix up my flower garden with my vegetables.
Sure.
And I put it in there as another plant. And it's a really pretty plant. So I have several of it around my house. And then I can just go pick as I need it.
Oh, I love that. And I love the idea of interplanting edibles with decorative plants. There's no reason that you have to have, you know, the traditional idea of the ugly vegetable garden hidden in the back of the property. Most of us don't have, well, you and I have big properties, we're lucky, but most of our listeners don't have big properties, so please feel free to interplant.
Oh, and they're pretty. Edibles. You know, you could have your red peppers, and they look like flowers, and you could have, I have two mandarin orange trees in my front flower bed, and they're just small, and they're beautiful, and in the wintertime, they get these beautiful little oranges on them, you know, mandarins on them, and they're so pretty, and you know, and the kale's in there, and things just look really pretty, and you can intertwine that with your roses and with your other plants. It just works out well.
Yeah, and especially I like to do a lot of the herbs because I think thyme makes the most beautiful edging.
It does.
So many different, you know, the lemon thyme, the variegated thyme, there's so many different. The French thyme make just beautiful edgings in your flower beds, and then you have thyme all of the time. Get it? So, I do love interplanting, and parsley, another great edging plant. I think it's just a nice, you know, that's that bright green, just really lovely. And, of course, the rosemary we use, most of us in Southern California, as a landscape plant like crazy. So, you know, you should never have to buy rosemary at the grocery store. There should be some in your garden somewhere.
Yes. You know, I'm so used to it now. It just is part of my, when you said that, I'm like, oh, I thought it was part of everybody's yard.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, I remember as a kid, my mom had a recipe she made with a marinated steak. Then she always put dried thyme, you know, in this marinade. And I think about it now and I'm like, I never use dried thyme. I just go out in the garden and get, you know, a sprig of fresh thyme because it just grows here like crazy. So we're very lucky that we have that ability. But moving on, so we talked about our veggie garden. So the conclusion there is if you haven't or finished planting or you never got started planting your warm season veggies, May is a great month to do that. Get out there and do it.
Just go do it. And it's nothing like having a vine ripened tomato or coming home and picking a beautiful bell pepper and putting it in a salad. It's just yummy, wonderful. You save time shopping. And it's
Absolutely.
Good for you.
And do it in pots. If you have run out of garden space, I this year have started growing four additional tomato plants in pots because my cool season veggie garden was not done yet. And so I thought, you know, I don't want to wait to plant my tomatoes. So I've got four of them at least in pots, and then I'll continue to plant a few more this month. But, you know, please, please try containers if you live in a small place with just a balcony or a patio. Don't be afraid to give that a try. Containers are great for growing edibles.
You know, at this point in time, we should tell people about our website. You can
Absolutely.
Get a lot of information
Absolutely.
About what we're talking about at www.uccemg.com. If you have a specific question, we have a hotline, and you can just ask your question on the hotline. Our hotline people are phenomenal.
And give them the email address for the hotline.
Okay, the hotline is hotline. It's HOTLINE at UCCEMG.com. And if you didn't get it right now, we'll repeat it a couple times during the show. But it's great, the website and the hotline, wonderful information, great people to answer your questions. They're really, really helpful. They have great attitudes, and there's loads of information.
And I can tell you, because I'm on the email list for the hotline questions, the hotline is burning up this time of year because everybody's planting and they have lots of questions. So those hotline people, master gardeners, are fully staffed this time of year because they want to make sure that everybody gets their questions answered. So give it a try. They're great people, as Katrina said. So moving on, let's finish with edibles and let's move on into our decorative gardens because, you know, I still want to have some flowers even though we have these drought conditions and I think I can manage it with a few little wise things to do. How about you, Katrina? Are you keeping your flowers going?
Not as many.
Yeah.
But I'm letting my perennials become more in my yard.
There you go.
And it's okay to have some blank spaces.
Absolutely.
A little bit of compost, a little bit of mulch, it looks fine.
Let's talk about that. Katrina said the magic word for our drought-stricken gardens, mulch. We've talked about this in other shows, but particularly now that we're in this terrible, terrible drought, we can't emphasize enough how mulch is really going to conserve water for your garden.
Well, Tina, first of all, would you tell our listeners what mulch is?
Yeah, it's a little confusing because we have all these terms. We have, you know, the term soil amendment, the term compost, the term mulch. And before I was a master gardener, I kind of thought they were all one and the same thing. So it is important to know what the difference is. So when we talk about mulch, we're talking about anything that you lay on top of the soil. Anything. So you could put shredded newspaper on top of the soil. You could put straw on top of the soil. You could put gravel on top of the soil. Those are all considered mulch. So mulch just means something that you lay on top of the soil. So why would you lay stuff on top of the soil? Well, there are several really good reasons, one of which is that it conserves moisture in the soil. And the mulch that we prefer for folks to use in their gardens where they're growing plants that are not succulents would be an organic mulch. And that just means something that was once alive, right? So we're talking about the redwood bark chips. That's a great mulch to use in your areas where you've got permanent plantings like trees and shrubs. You can also use compost. So those bags that say compost or soil amendment, those can be used just on top of the ground. You don't have to dig them into the soil. You do dig them into the soil if you're going to plant new things because that amends the soil and makes it more in a better condition for the plants to grow. But you can also use that as mulch. And so why would you use soil amendment as a mulch or compost as a mulch? Well, in your veggie garden where you're growing, you know, tomatoes and peppers and things that you're going to be changing out every season, well, picture putting redwood bark on top of your veggie garden, right? It would serve a good purpose as a mulch. It would conserve the water. But what about when you had to rip out those plants and you wanted to put in lettuce for the cool season? You don't want to have all those chunks of, you know, redwood or not redwood bark, but, you know, tree bark in your beds, because that would not be a good environment then for the new plants. So in a bed where you're going to be changing things out frequently, I use the soil amendment or compost as a mulch because that's just going to decompose, mix right into the soil, and make the soil better for your next crop.
Now, Tina, how big of a layer of that do you put on there?
It's best to go ahead and put at least 3 inches. In the veggie garden, sometimes I'll only put 2 inches, but particularly when you're out mulching your shrubs and trees, go ahead and put 3 to 4 inches of that chunky mulch like the bark chips. That is a great way to insulate that soil. And it not only insulates it in terms of keeping the moisture in, but it doesn't have the soil get so hot.
Yeah.
You know?
You know, your tomatoes, when it gets hot, they want to stop. If soil gets too hot, they stop growing. And you can keep it like 20 degrees cooler, can't you?
Yeah, it's absolutely a great insulator, and it moderates the soil temperature so that your plant isn't getting shocked by extreme heat during the day, and then, you know, even though the nights won't get super cold, you know, there can be a 20 degree swing, you know, in our air temps, and this way those soil temps don't have to swing that much, and it's just a more comfortable environment for the plant. And then, of course, my actual personal favorite thing that mulch does is it suppresses weeds. If the sun can't hit the bare soil where the seeds are, then those seeds aren't going to germinate.
Oh, well, I want to talk to you about seeds in a couple minutes, but I have one other question for you about mulch.
Sure.
Have you ever tried hay?
Yes, and you can use straw or hay, but you have to make sure you purchase weed-free hay or straw, however it's labeled. And it actually, I've used it in my strawberry beds, and it actually makes a really nice mulch for the strawberries, because then, you know how when the strawberries ripen and they're laying right on the soil, mm-hmm. and they end up starting to rot on that side, mm-hmm. or the slugs are able to come mm-hmm. and nibble on them. By having them rest on the straw, they're on this nice, clean environment, and it really works well. The only drawback is that sometimes if you have mice a lot of mice in your yard, they like to nest in the hay or the straw. So I have had that happen, but it wasn't a big deal. I just set a few mouse traps around the strawberry bed, and that seemed to deter it. But it can be great. One other thing, though, about it is if you first put it down and we get a Santa Ana wind, mm-hmm. you might have bits of straw blowing all over your yard. But after you irrigate it a few times, it seems to settle down and it doesn't seem to blow around much. It's just when you first put it down that it does sometimes.
We've been putting it last few years into our vegetable garden and mm-hmm. have had really nice results with it.
Yeah.
Kay Havens turned us, a master gardener by the name of Kay Havens turned me on to it.
Who was on the show last month. Yeah.
Yes. And it looks beautiful. It reflects the light, and so your plants, your tomatoes are getting lots of sun. It keeps the temperature cool. Fortunately, we don't have any mice problems. We've had rats before, but
yeah.
those don't tend to go in that area.
Yeah.
So it's just it's just something different.
I agree with you. I think it's a great mulch for vegetable gardens. Really, really a good mulch. And it's pretty inexpensive. How much did you pay for a bale of hay?
Oh, I don't remember anymore, but and a bale of hay goes really far.
Oh my gosh, you can mulch. I once bought a bale of hay and I think I used it for 3 seasons in my vegetable garden.
I bought too many. And I ended up using them for, we have bows and arrows, archery.
Oh.
And I used them for the background for that because yeah. I would have had, once it comes apart, there's so much to it, I would have had a 2-foot-high mulching bed.
Yeah, yeah.
So you don't need a lot. So bale goes really far.
It does go really far, and share it. You know, if you've got a couple of friends who are doing vegetable gardening too, you know, buy one bale and split it up. You just undo the cords from it and break a chunk of it off, throw it in a plastic trash can, and you can, you know, take it over to a friend's house and share it. And I think it's only like, what, $8 a bale or $10 a bale or something?
Yeah,
it's
12 pretty, or something like
yeah,
that. It's not
pretty
very
cheap.
Yeah, it's very cheap. It's kind of novel, too.
Yeah.
People are not used to seeing it.
Yeah, it's true. It's true because we mostly get our supplies from the local big box retailer, and they don't sell bales of hay there. Amazingly enough.
Well, I just segued on that, but I'd love you to tell us a little bit about weeds because everything is growing right now, including weeds.
Yeah, the weeds are growing like crazy, and that's because, you know, we have these nice warm temperatures, and the seeds that were laying possibly a little bit dormant in the soil when the weather was cool are now germinating like crazy with the warm temperatures. And if we're irrigating, you know, our new plants, then of course they're getting water. So that's the other reason that you want to mulch as much as you possibly can, because it will prevent those weed seeds from germinating. If you haven't mulched though, and you do have weed seeds germinating, really, I mean, you know this, Katrina, gosh, you need to get out there ASAP. A hula hoe, I don't know if you use a hula hoe.
A hula hoe is one of my favorite friends.
Oh, great tool. So if you have areas that have weeds, get a hula hoe if you don't already have one. They're not that expensive. And it's only about 5 inches in diameter. It's actually kind of a, almost, not a circle, but kind of a rectangular piece of metal that goes around in a little rectangle. And you just rub it back and forth on your soil, and it chops the weeds right off, and then you can rake them up and dispose of them. But if you do it while the weeds are small, you know, a couple of inches tall, before they start to flower, you'll love yourself. Because if you wait, what happens?
Oh, my gosh. They have thousands, hundreds of babies, and then you have such a huge problem. I took a weed class the other night.
Oh, well, you should be talking about weeds.
No. We were just looking about how, if you can get them when they're an inch or two high, the smaller you can get them, take that hula hoe and just knock them down. A few minutes of prevention could save you hours of weeding.
Absolutely. And what I've been doing, because as you know, my home's on a garden tour next, the first weekend in May, is I've been, of course, weeding everywhere in my yard. And I do the weeding with a bag of compost next to me. Because as soon as I weed an area, I throw compost on top of it to mulch it. So that way I'm sure that I am covering up those seeds so they won't germinate for the next generation.
And another nice thing about those hula hoes, it cuts it off at the surface. If you start digging up your soil, you're pulling up all those weed seeds. up to the surface and they're going to want to germinate. So that little hula hoop, most box stores have them, I think.
Yeah.
And you just scrape them off the top, cover them up with the compost, and your life is going to be a lot easier. Spending a little bit of time to get rid of them and when they're young.
Absolutely. You don't want to mess with these weeds over the long haul, and you just really need to take care of them while they're really nice and small, particularly because a lot of us will start taking vacations, you know, over the summer. So the more that we can control them now before we start going on these vacations, the less trouble our yard is going to be in after we're not paying attention to it while we're on vacation.
or playing or doing your summer activities.
Yeah. So that's the best way to conserve water and keep the weeds down is mulch, mulch, and more mulch. But let's talk a little bit more about doing some planting this month. We've talked about finishing up our warm season veggies. You would also want to continue planting if you're doing some annuals, if you have certain areas of your yard where you're willing to invest a little more water. Mm-hmm. And I like to do it in the areas that are closest to the house or the patio, you know, where mm-hmm. we can really enjoy the color. Then this would be the month that you want to plant those warm season marigolds, for instance, or cosmos, or zinnias. Zinnias are one of my favorite annuals to plant in the summer. Do you like those?
I love them. And talk to us about zinnias, because you light up, your face just lights up when you hear about it.
Well, Katrina knows that I love cut flowers in the house. And a lot of the plants that we get in the nurseries these days are bred to stay short because they bloom when they're in the six packs, you know, when they're really short. But the trouble is they don't have long enough stems to cut and bring in the house. So I love to plant things that are taller, and one of my favorite things are the tall zinnias. And the other reason I like to plant them is you can get seed and plant them from seed. And a lot of times you can't find the tall ones in the nurseries.
And I have tried.
Yeah.
And the ones you get in the nurseries that are tall, a lot of them are root bound if you find them.
Yeah. So I like to just go look at the seed rack at the nursery and look. You know, it always tells you how tall that particular zinnia will get. And there's some that get, you know, 3-4 feet tall. And they get some flower heads on them that are, you know, 3 inches plus across. And they come in amazing colors, almost every color of the rainbow except blue. Zinnias don't come in blue. But they come in, you know, purples and pinks, kind of pinkish purple, magenta-y kind of purples. They don't usually have the real deep purples, but yellow, orange, red. And I love all those colors.
Oh, my gosh. For a package of seeds, you have a garden full of flowers.
Yeah,
3-4 feet tall. And then you can plant the shorter ones in front of it if you like.
You do. And if you don't want to plant from seed, you can find the shorter ones all over the place. One of my favorite varieties is Profusion. Have you ever planted that one?
No, I haven't.
That's a really nice low one. It only gets 6-8 inches high, and the flowers are only an inch or so across. But the name Profusion gives you a clue about what happens. They just bloom continuously in this mound that is just covered with dozens of these flowers. So they make a really nice edging in the front of your flower bed. Mm. And zinnias are somewhat water thrifty. They aren't as thirsty as other annuals. So if you still want to have some color, but you want some...
I do.
No, but you want an annual that isn't super thirsty, then try the zinnias. I mean, they're not drought tolerant. I wouldn't call them drought tolerant, but they are very tolerant of heat, and they don't use as much water as some other annuals do. But the way that I plant them from seed is you can sow them in the ground, but I have such a problem with snails that I like to start them in six packs on the counter outside. I have a little counter I can start them on. And just wait till they're about 3 or 4 inches tall, and then I transplant them in the garden. Then it just gives them a better chance against the snails, because then when I plant them, of course, I spread snail bait out, and the hopefully they'll be surviving, being able to survive those poor snails. But I think it's probably time for us to give a little disclaimer. We just want everyone to know that the opinions that we're expressing on this show don't necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. But for more information about this show, you can go to kuci.org. And just as a reminder, you're listening to In the Garden with Master Gardeners on KUCI 88.9 in Irvine. So let's talk a little bit more about color in our summer garden.
Oh, yes.
How have your roses been doing so far?
Well, I learned all about roses from my friend Tina, and now I'm having lots of roses.
Good.
They look the best they have in years. Thank you so much for doing this show, Tina.
Well, we really spent a lot of time on it back in January, so if we all did our good pruning and our good spraying in January, we should have had some really nice roses in April. That's when we get pretty much our first big flush of roses. And now that it's May, it's time for us to try and encourage those future bloom cycles. And so if you have had your first bloom flush, then you know you need to deadhead, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And deadhead some more.
And when you deadhead, we always want to cut the flower stalk off right above a leaf that has 5 leaflets on it. And we want to make sure that that leaf is pointing out away from the plant, not in towards the center of the plant. Because wherever you make that cut, that's where your new growth is going to start. And if you do it at a leaf where the leaf is facing out, then your branch of your rose, the new one, is going to be pointing out away from the plant. If you did it where the leaflet was pointing towards the inside of the plant, then your branch is going to grow into the middle of the plant. And of course, if you do that for several branches, then you're going to have all these branches crisscrossing each other in the middle of the plant. So we don't want to have that happen.
So you want it more open and airy.
Absolutely. We always want to try and imagine that we can put a beach ball in the center of that rose bush. So we want to keep the branches growing towards the outside of the rose. And then after we deadhead, after each bloom of your roses, you want to give them a little food. And so the way that you do that is whatever fertilizer you're using, read the package directions, follow the amount that it tells you to give, 1/4 cup per bush, or maybe it's more if you're using an organic fertilizer. And you want to sprinkle that around the perimeter of that rose bush, not too close to the trunk, because the feeder roots are more towards the outward edge of the plant where the outer branches are. And then I like to scratch it in just a little bit with a little cultivator tool, you know, the kind that have the little 3 prongs. And if you scratch it into the soil, then it is less likely to be washed away when the sprinklers come on, and it can absorb down into that root zone where the roots can take it up and get you some more blooms, which is what we want.
Tina's yard is so beautiful right now. Her roses are blooming like crazy.
Thank goodness. So that there's something for these poor people who are coming on the garden tour to look at. Although I have to tell you, the silly deer have come in and been munching on the roses that are towards the back of the yard since I'm not fenced, but oh well. Poor little deer. They need something to eat. You know what I'm going to try doing? I read that if you tie bars of Irish Spring soap to the branches of your roses, they don't like the smell. So,
oh, that could be really. You have company coming over?
Haven't done that experiment yet, but isn't that funny?
Oh yeah. My gosh, have company and you have Irish Spring hanging from your...
People are going to think they need to take a shower in the backyard or something.
Oh my gosh. One time I had a gourd. Don't ever compost gourds.
Oh, because of the seeds.
Oh my gosh. It took me 10 years to get rid of gourds. I had gourds everywhere.
Oh, how funny.
And one time I had this gourd climbing up my pepper tree, and it climbed up the pepper tree and it hung down. Oh, it was a pumpkin. And it was a gourd. And it hung down. It's like 30 feet in the air. And I have these gourds hanging.
Oh, but how cool.
And it was hysterical because I just told everybody it was a tree because that's what it looked like. And it was just
a gourd tree.
A gourd tree.
How
and
funny.
They went with it. So that was pretty bad, but it looked pretty cool.
Well, that's just an example, though, I think, of how it is fun to just let certain things happen in your garden. It's fun to watch, especially if you have kids or grandkids, to let them watch nature, you know, do its own thing. Yeah, so
that's what made me think about your Irish Spring tree.
Yeah, so Irish Spring tree, a rose bush that's growing Irish Spring. So yeah, that's the way we want to keep our roses going, and we want to do that, throughout the summer. Every time they bloom, you want to deadhead them, and then you want to give them a little fertilizer to encourage the next bloom cycle. And of course, here where we live, that could be happening all the way to December. That's what happened last year with the roses because we never really got very cold weather. And then, of course, in January, we force them to stop blooming by pruning them. But it's good to be able to have roses, I think, for a good chunk of the year. There is one exception, though, I should mention. May is a time when we prune certain roses. The one that I can think of off the top of my head are the Lady Banks roses, which are a rambler kind of rose. A rambler means that it's a climbing rose that just kind of goes everywhere. It rambles. And these are roses that have been around for a really long time. And before, roses were hybridized a lot and bred to be blooming repeatedly. Roses used to only bloom in, one time of year, May, June, that time of year. But these newer roses that we've had for the 20th and 21st centuries, of course, bloom repeatedly. But there's a few, like the Lady Banks rose, that only bloom once a year. So if you have any roses, especially some of these older climbing roses, that you've noticed only bloom once a year, you want to prune them right after they bloom, which is generally in May. They usually bloom in April, and so in May you want to prune them. And the reason you want to do that is if you wait till later, you'll be cutting off the blooming part of the rose, and then you would end up with none or very few roses in the following bloom season.
So it's important to know what type of rose you have.
It is. The other plants that are like that, one that comes to mind is wisteria. So wisteria blooms pretty much once a year, although you were telling me you've heard of a couple that bloom more than once a year
I
now,
thought there's
huh?
some new ones out there that does it, but I'm not positive, so.
Yeah, so that's I don't have any of those, so I do know that most of the wisteria only blooms once a year. So that anything that you have that has just bloomed and you know it only blooms once a year, the general rule of thumb is prune it after it blooms.
Tell me about camellias and azaleas.
And good question. Another two types of plants that again only bloom once a year, and most of those have bloomed in the spring. There are a variety of camellias that bloom in the fall, the sasanquas, but if they're not sasanquas and they've bloomed in the spring or late winter, now is when you want to prune them. Otherwise, if you wait too late, you're going to be cutting off the blooms, the blossoms for the following year.
Now, how far would you prune them?
I only prune them to shape. Azaleas and camellias are not super rambunctious growers. They are pretty orderly, and so I usually just prune them just to give them a nice shape. There just might be a couple little branches that, are going off in a direction that you don't want. You might want a little more mounded kind of shape in your azaleas. Your camellias might have a little bit of dead wood, and you might want to, trim that off. And then you also then want to fertilize them in May because the camellias and azaleas, when they're blooming, they actually aren't actively growing. I know I was always kind of surprised
Really?
about that. Yeah, they are just coming out of their quasi-dormant, they're not really dormant, but their slow growth period. When they bloom, it's prior to them sending out a lot of vegetative growth, in other words, new leaves. So they bloom first before they grow a bunch of new leaves. So after they bloom and you shape them a little bit if you want to, then is when you want to fertilize them because that's when they're going to be sending out their new leaves and they'll need a lot of food in order to do that.
Good to know.
Yeah.
That's one of the ones you can get off track on.
Yeah, absolutely. I know it's a little confusing. We're pretty good about deadheading, most of our plants, but we don't realize that some of these have these, kind of different bloom cycles. They bloom once in the early spring, and then they're pretty much done. So, yeah, let's see what else about flowers. Oh, I know. One of my favorites are iris. Do you plant any iris?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
But tell me about iris because I'm interested.
Well, actually, with our drought conditions, this is a plant I think that's going to get a little more popular. It's always been popular, particularly in old style gardens. I know my mom always planted iris from the time I was a little kid, and she planted them in kind of the nether regions of the garden, you know, where you weren't going to be paying a whole lot of attention to it, and it might not get super regular watering, and they were perfectly happy. So these are the bearded iris, the ones that get the little fuzzy beard on the petals.
Tall. Are they tall?
When they bloom, they're tall. The plant itself has kind of sword-shaped leaves, and the leaves are probably, oh, I would say 16, you know, 12 to 16 inches tall. But then when they bloom, the blooms can get to be a couple feet tall.
And they're beautiful, and they're drought-tolerant.
And they are. They're not drought-tolerant like cactus or succulents.
But as far as flowers.
But as far as flowers, they're pretty drought-tolerant. And so I think you're really going to see a lot of those coming in the garden. And the neat thing about May is they often bloom in May and June. And so if you want to be sure what color you're getting, it's a good time to buy them in, say, a one-gallon pot, because you can see them in bloom and you can say, oh, I like that color. The other cool thing about them is over time, the clumps, they grow on a rhizome. So a rhizome is like a swollen root, right? Not really a bulb so much. It's a swollen root. And you plant, you know, one rhizome, and it will have one fan of these sword-shaped leaves. Well, after a year, you'll probably have four or five of those fans of leaves, you know, mm-hmm. each of which will send up a bloom. So the moral of the story is you get a lot of bang for your buck over time. I remember when I was a kid, my mom's iris ended up being these clumps that were, you know, 3 feet wide.
Wow.
And then, of course, you want to, I never let mine get that big, but, you know, mine will get, you know, to be a foot or 2 feet wide, and then you want to actually dig them up and divide them, because the blooms, the bloom quality mm-hmm. declines as they get crowded. So, but it's free plants, you know, as you dig them and divide them.
And they're beautiful, and there's thousands of different varieties out there.
So many different colors. And what's really cool about nowadays, as opposed to the ones our mothers planted, is that they have bred them to rebloom. It used to be that this was mm-hmm. one of those plants that would, you know, bloom in the spring in May and June, and then it was done. You had the foliage, which is nice and attractive the rest of the year, but you didn't get flowers. But the reblooming varieties will bloom off and on over the summer, or some of them will bloom in the spring and then again in fall. So you can read up on, you know, ones that you see that you like and determine whether or not it's a good fit for your garden. But honestly, I think they're going to be a really popular yes. plant as we have to use less and less water.
And there's beautiful catalogs out there on them.
Oh,
to
gosh.
Buy them. There's catalogs. You can just get a catalog, find the color that you like, what you like about it, what you don't, the height.
There are iris societies. I mean, there are people who have these groups that do nothing but, you know, plant these irises and learn about them and love them. So you can get on the internet and read up on all different kinds of info. I don't know that much about them. I just know that I like them. I choose them based on their color, and then I choose the ones that rebloom because I want to have ones that rebloom. And they're cut flowers. They're nice cut flowers. What's cool is on a single stalk, you'll have several, you know, blooms. And so you bring one in the house with, you know, one flower blooming, but this other ones will open up. And so over the course of a week, you have, you know, a different flower opening up when it's in a vase of water. So they're kind of fun to bring inside too.
You know, you could actually save a fortune by planting flowers, so you don't have to go out and buy them.
There you go.
Your house always has beautiful flowers in it. And if you had to go out and buy all the flowers that you have in your house.
Well, I do like to have them. And as my husband says, it's cheaper than a therapist. The flowers are my therapy. So in the end, I think it works for all of us.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Let's see. What else should we talk about? How much time do we have left?
We have about 10-15 minutes.
Okay, let's talk about lawns. Even though we don't want to have lawns going forward as much in our yards, if you have a warm season lawn in your yard already, and that would be a lawn like St. Augustine or Bermuda, remember they're really going to be growing like gangbusters this time of year because they love the warm weather. So it is a good time if you have the water and a small lawn, hopefully, this is when you would want to fertilize your warm season lawn. If you have a cool season lawn, and those are the fescue type lawns, you would want to feed it one last time perhaps in May, and then you don't want to feed them over the summer. And if you fed it in April, you probably don't need to feed them in May. They will not be growing as fast over the summer because they like cooler weather, so the warmer weather will stress them out. The other thing I want to mention too, do you still have lawn, Katrina?
Yeah.
Do you? What do you know what kind yours is?
I think I have one down below and the
a different kind.
Yeah. Up above.
So I think what Katrina and I practice, because we both have, I have a piece of lawn just in my backyard, none in my front yard. And what I really practice, because we were taught this when we went through Master Gardener training, is if you are keeping a little piece of lawn, please, please do cycled irrigation when you irrigate your lawn and all your plants for that matter. And cycled irrigation means that if you determine by reading your newsletter from your water company and they're recommending that you water your lawn for 5 minutes two times a week at this particular time of year, cut that watering time in half and water two times, have two cycles for half as much time. So for instance, if you're going to water for a total of 6 minutes, water one cycle for 3 minutes, then let all of your other stations in your yard do their watering cycle for half of the time. Then come back and have your cycle run again and get that other 3 minutes on it later. The reason you want to do that is that way you don't have runoff. And the last thing any of us want to see these days is any water going down the gutter.
It's so sad. I mean, I have a lawn right now, but I never have runoff. It's just wasted water.
Yeah, we're super, super careful. So I water my lawn typically, you know, twice a week, even in the heat of the summer. The other thing to know about your lawns is they'll adjust. If you, you know, force them to not have water every other day, they'll get, you know, they'll learn to deal with it, that you can cut back. I mean, it's like if we go on a diet, you know. Would we like to eat 3,000 calories a day? Absolutely. But if we have to only have, you know, 1,800, we'll make do, right? Well, your lawn, of course, there's a point at which the lawn will die. But, you know, keep an eye on it. Try, if you want to keep your lawn, try watering it using this cycled irrigation and watering it less and see at what point it is still going to survive but not use up as much water as it has in the past.
And it's pretty, I've done that, and it's pretty, you could tell when your lawn is saying, okay, I'm about as least as I can get. And it'll tell you.
It will. The you'll see the leaves on the grass, you know, the grass will start to look dried out. I mean, it will. It'll just look like it's suffering from lack of water. So then you'll know you've reached that point and you shouldn't go past that. If you are going to be planning on replacing your lawn, and we hope that a lot of people will do that, it isn't the best time to be doing it right as we get into summer, to be honest. Of course, if where you live, your water company is not giving you an allocation and the lawn is going to die, then you may just take out that lawn right now. But just be aware that native plants and drought-tolerant plants are usually going into their dormant season when it's summertime. And so when you plant those in the summertime, they are going to need some water because brand new plants, whether they're drought-tolerant or native plants, are still going to need some water to get started. They don't have a root system yet that is deep enough to find moisture. So do know that they're not going to be growing super actively over the summer because they're kind of in a dormant phase. And do know also that they will need some water if you expect them to survive.
And also, if you plan on taking your plants out, contact your water company, because there's a lot of rebates out there right now.
There sure are. Yeah. So absolutely.
Defer your cost of removing it.
Yeah. Absolutely check with your water companies and see how they'll help you out with rebates. The ideal time to take out your lawn is in the fall. And so if you want to do some planning over the summer, talk to maybe landscape architect or landscape designer if you want some professional help with it. Summer would be a great time to plan it, and then you'd be ready to go come October to just get in there, take your lawn out. And actually, the Katrina and I have seen landscapes that have replaced lawns which are so much prettier than
stunning.
The lawn.
Stunning.
Oh yeah.
Just stunning.
And they bloom, right? Mm-hmm. They've got color and they're just quite, quite lovely. So just wanted to give everybody that warning about replacing your lawn in the summer. It's not that you can't do it. It's just not the ideal time. And you just have to be careful if you do it in the summer and be sure that you're watering them enough so they get settled, and don't expect great things during those hot months, because they're going to be kind of taking it easy during those hot months.
You're planting a seed for change, aren't
yes,
you?
We yes, hope sir. So. We hope so.
Well, Tina, if we got a little bit of time left, could you tell us a little bit about ferns?
Oh, yeah. Ferns are interesting little creatures. They're some of the oldest plants on the planet, which is, you know, very interesting. And, of course, they are green, right? Mm-hmm. So they start really growing a lot this time of year. And so you want to feed them this time of year so that they have the nutrients to produce that green growth.
But you also have to be very careful when you feed them.
You do. They are really sensitive to burning. And so one of the safest fertilizers to use is just fish emulsion.
That's what I use.
Yeah.
It's safe. I don't worry about it.
Yeah, you mix it in water.
I mix it in water.
And then you water them, and it gives them that little bit of nitrogen that they want, and they don't get burned, so they're kind of happy.
They're happy.
Yeah. The exception to that is our native ferns. If you have any of the California native ferns, you don't want to fertilize them this time of year. They actually don't really need a lot of fertilizer because they are native and they're used to growing in our native soil. And they will wake up and really start growing when we get rain, which we didn't get a lot of this year. But if you were irrigating that area where you might have some native ferns, they would have grown really nicely throughout the winter and into the early spring. But now that it's going to be late spring, like any other California native, it's going into its dormant time. And you never want to feed plants when they're trying to go dormant.
Gotcha.
So let's see, was there anything else that we haven't covered yet?
Tropical plants.
Oh, of course. May is the best time to plant tropical plants and other heat-loving plants like citrus and palms. So they, of course, love hot weather, and they like warm soil. So until May, our soil hasn't been all that warm. You know, it started warming up in March and through April. And in May, the soil is getting nice and warm and will get even warmer. So this is a great time to plant any kind of tropical plant. Bougainvillea, hibiscus, as I said, the palms, any of those tropical plants. It's a good time to plant in May. Just a warning, though, about tropical plants. Think about where they come from. They come from areas that get a lot of rain. So I'm not sure that that's a plant that we're going to be seeing a lot of new plantings of, because they generally are going to take more water than we might have available to give them. So with the exception of citrus, of course, because I'm really encouraging everyone, even though we have a drought, to plant edibles, because that is worth the investment. We still have to eat. So planting, you know, an orange tree that's going to give you some food is worth the investment of water, I think. So go ahead and continue planting those citrus if you want. Especially a lemon tree.
Oh my gosh, you have every house. My stepdaughter, when she moved out, she said, I thought every house had to have a lemon tree because that's what she was told growing up. And when she found out, she never thought about it when she moved out, every house didn't have a lemon tree.
Well, you and I think it should be a law. Maybe we should lobby for legislation, right?
Actually, two lemon trees. You got a Myers and a Eureka. Yeah, I have two.
Or three trees. Also have one of those Washington navels. We do live in Orange County, after all, so we should have a Washington navel or a Valencia. The Valencias were what were grown here in acres and acres back in the day when we really had oranges in Orange County, and they're fabulous for juicing. Also, as long as we're talking about planting citrus, if you are going to plant citrus, consider planting a Valencia and a Washington navel. The Washington navels will grow here. They just like heat in order to get super sweet, so ours might not get quite as sweet as they would in Riverside. But if you plant a Washington navel and a Valencia, because they ripen at different times during the year, you'll end up having oranges for probably, 8 months out of the year?
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. I have some of each in my yard.
How wonderful. Yeah. Well, I think we're just about out of time today. Today it went really fast, didn't it?
It did. I hope we covered everything. I'm not even going to look at my notes to see if we missed anything, but I hope we have covered all of the stuff. There's still a lot to do in May. It's not real hot yet, so Hope everybody goes out there.
Go and do it. Plant some vegetables. Plant some flowers. It's a great time to do it. It's a good family event, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, especially since we've got Mother's Day and graduations and maybe even some weddings coming up. It's a great time to get your yard in good shape for all those events.
Investment now for the rest of the summer.
Yeah, absolutely.
All righty. Well, I want to thank you, Tina, with your wealth of knowledge. I really appreciate it. I want the listeners to know that they could reach us at www.ucceemg.com. And our hotline number is hotline@uccemg.com. Please, please call us. Look up our website. We're really there to help you out. And we thank you for listening to us today.